Yeah, so my name's Katie Broomfield and I'm a postgraduate researcher at Royal Holloway University of London, and one of the women who I'm researching as part of my PhD is Mary Elaine Sykes. And well, as the title of my talk suggests, she was one of the first women solicitors in England and Wales following the passing of the Sex Disqualification Removal Act in 1919. As Caroline mentioned, the Act was passed on the 23rd of December 1919 and removed all legal barriers to women working as lawyers on the grounds of their sex. Before 1919, women had made many attempts to access the legal profession, but without success. And in fact, in 1913, the Court of Appeal explicitly stated that for the purposes of the Solicitors Act 1843, women were not persons and so couldn't be solicitors. I first came across Mary when I was reading for my master's degree in history at Royal Holloway. She's mentioned briefly in Caroline Bingham's The History of Royal Holloway College as having become a solicitor as soon as the Sex Disqualification Removal Act permitted her to do so. So as a graduate of Royal Holloway myself and also a lawyer, I determined to find out more. Of course, what ought to be surprising about that is that as a lawyer and a historian, I hadn't heard about Mary until 2 years ago. But as historians of women are all too aware, the recovery of lost or excluded stories remains an important task. And this is particularly true in the case of women lawyers, which is why I'm so pleased that Judith has organised this symposia and has invited me here to talk about Mary. So Mary described her life as one long rush, and so it's perhaps not surprising that she appears not to have found time to write a diary, and she has left no written record of her achievements. My research is therefore largely based on local and national newspaper reports and documents in the archives at Royal Holloway and at the universities of Leeds and Huddersfield, and I should also say in conversation with her niece and great-niece, who I'm delighted are here today. As is often the case with women's history, my narrative of her life is drawn from incomplete sources. A report that it was the wish of both Mary and her father, partner in his own firm of solicitors, that the legal connection of the family should be continued, appears to conflict with reports that Mary left Royal Holloway College in 1917 without any very clear idea about a career. In fact, Mary had an older brother, Eric Turner Sykes, who had intended to join his father's firm. Mary was very close to Eric, and when he was reported missing in action on the Western Front in May 1917, she and her father both agreed that she should study to become a lawyer and join her father in his firm in Eric's stead. Mary's entry into the legal profession in this way was not unusual. Dora Ford, writing for the Daily News in April 1921, remarked that about 40 women in the British Isles are now training as solicitors. The majority of these hail from the enterprising north or from Wales. Many of them are the daughters of country solicitors who have no sons or else have lost them in the war, and who have articled their girls instead so as to keep the practice in the family. So Mary was born in Honley near Huddersfield in 1896. She was the only daughter and middle child of James Sykes and Emma Amelia Sykes. She was privately educated as a boarder at Brentwood School, Southport, before entering Royal Holloway College on the 8th of October 1914, aged 18 and 2/12. The records are very, very precise. Royal Holloway was a pioneering women's college founded by Thomas Holloway in 1883 and opened by Queen Victoria, hence the Royal, in 1886. With the aim of offering the best education suitable for women of the middle and upper middle classes. By 1914, women were admitted as students at all English and Welsh universities, although Oxford and Cambridge didn't offer degrees to women until 1920 and 1948, respectively. And Mary was still of the generation traditionally identified as pioneers in women's higher education. As the Royal Holloway College magazine, The College Letter, reported in 1914, there were still those who bewailed the loss of the domestic virtues in emancipated college days. So presumably worried that they wouldn't be washing their wigs, but among those women to bewail the loss of the domestic virtues was Mary's mother, who, despite having worked before her marriage, found the idea of Mary going away to college difficult to understand. Nonetheless, Mary appears to have thrived both academically and socially at Royal Holloway. She participated in numerous extracurricular activities, including swimming, rowing, hockey, and foreshadowing her later political career, she sat on the Students' Representative Council. She was also able to indulge her love of poetry as secretary of the Browning Discussion Society, and she graduated with second class honours in English in 1917. The first woman to graduate with a law degree from any English university was Eliza Orme in 1888. She was a student at University College London. And between 1888 and 1919, a further seven women graduated with degrees in law from the University of London. Women were also studying for law degrees at other universities, including Oxford and Cambridge, but not at Royal Holloway, where law was not one of the subjects deemed suitable for young ladies. Undaunted and possibly anticipating a change in the law, in 1918 Mary enrolled to study law at Leeds University, where she joined two other women, Doris Evans Pickering and Frances Grace Lupton. Enrolling at Leeds University towards the end of the First World War, Mary joined a student population with an unusual age spread, including those who came at about 16 and those in middle 20s, education held up by war service. Additionally, unlike Royal Holloway College, Leeds University was mixed sex, and despite women having been admitted to the university since its foundation by Royal Charter in 1904, women were a minority, and attitudes to women at this time were often far from complimentary, as the reminiscences of one of Mary's male classmates reveal. In those days, most of the women conformed to the now outdated mode of blue stocking type. They dressed in a dowdy manner. They mostly were bespectacled and very serious, and few took any pains to make themselves look attractive. I mean, I have wondered how at the pains taken by the male students to make themselves look attractive, but it was on the 23rd of December the following year that the Sex Disqualification Removal Act was passed. At this time, it wasn't actually necessary to have a law degree to qualify as a solicitor. However, the late 19th, early 20th centuries had witnessed a growth in professionalisation across a range of occupations, in which access to the professions was increasingly being regulated by the requirement for training and qualifications. In the case of those wishing to become solicitors, from 1861, the Law Society introduced a preliminary examination of general knowledge, including Latin, French, English, history, geography, and arithmetic. This was also in addition to the final examination, which had been introduced in 1836. Solicitors were also required to serve articles or an apprenticeship in a solicitor's office for 5 years, reduced to 3 years for graduates. When the Sex Disqualification Removal Act was passed in December 1919, Mary was immediately articled to her father in his firm, Armitage, Hinchcliffe and Sykes in Huddersfield. When her father died in 1921, which was obviously another personal tragedy for Mary following so soon from after the death of her brother, she nonetheless completed her articles, which is what we would now call a training contract, with another partner in her father's firm, Alfred Ernest Yates Trustrail. Having studied law at Leeds University, Mary obtained her LLB from the University of London in 1920. And in November 1922, along with three other women and 174 men, she sat the Law Society's final examination. The other women to sit the examination were Carrie Morrison, Maud Crofts, and Mary Elizabeth Pickup. This was the first time the examination had been open to women, and at 25 years old, Mary was the youngest of the four to sit the exam, passing with honours, which was evidence, as she later recalled, that she had made a habit of passing examinations. While all the women passed the exam, three with honours, it was reported in the Daily Chronicle that 44 of the men failed to qualify, and only 18 figured in the honours list, a much lower proportion than that achieved by the women. Mary represented her first client in court in 1922, and as she later recalled, although nervous, she was encouraged by the fact that, like Monica, she also won. She was admitted as a solicitor in February 1923 and for the next 7 years worked for her father's old firm. In 1930, in a display of what her tutors at Royal Holloway College described as her rather independent manner, which I think is a veiled compliment, Mary established her own firm, Mary Sykes & Co, and set up offices in Huddersfield. She was appointed as a magistrate in 1955, and her name continued to appear in the Law Society's law list until 1968. In 1980, Mary E. Sykes & Co merged with Ramsden Solicitors LLP, who were still in practice in Huddersfield. The longevity of Mary's career as a successful solicitor, however, belies the difficulties women wishing to pursue a career in law continue to face, with law continuing to be considered a male profession. At the annual dinner of the Huddersfield Law Society in 1960, a member of the local judiciary, Judge Kernan, described the solicitor's profession in Huddersfield as a strong, vigorous profession with the highest standards of integrity. Men able to advise their clients and fight their battles in court. This was notwithstanding that Mary had been appointed the first woman president of the Huddersfield Law Society in 1951. As historian Pat Fain has discovered, between 1922 and 1952, only 382 women qualified as solicitors in the whole of England and Wales. Yet Mary played an important role in seeking to improve these numbers, both through her legal practice and as a local politician. As well as being one of the first women solicitors in England and Wales, Mary was also the first female alderman and the first female mayor of Huddersfield. Having been raised in a Congressionalist liberal family, it was while she was a student at Royal Holloway College that Mary developed an interest in socialism. In 1935, the Huddersfield Citizen, which was the magazine of the Huddersfield Labour Party, of which Mary was a board member, reported that Mary had been a socialist of firm conviction of opinion ever since she grew up. And a handwritten eulogy among some of her personal papers records that it was while she was at university in London that this conviction was established. Mary's socialist conviction was reflected in her legal practice, where she focused on representing those who had been injured in accidents at work. It was not, however, until the 1930s that she embarked upon her political career, which began somewhat inauspiciously in 1933 when she stood unsuccessfully in a council by-election in Huddersfield. 2 years later, in 1935, she was elected as a Labour councillor. Although she was not the first woman to be elected a member of the Huddersfield Town Council, she was at the time, as you can see, the only representative of her sex. As the historian Martin Pugh has found, by 1937, women made up only 5 to 6% of all local councillors in England and Wales. He suggests that in view of the fact that women had roughly 50 years' experience in local politics, one might have expected them to have capitalised on their position more extensively. However, this does rather ignore the realities for women seeking election in both local and national politics. As the Huddersfield Citizen reported following Mary's election, in view of the prejudice that still exists against a woman candidate, her victory was all the more meritorious. In 1938, in a demonstration of Mary's dedication to public office and the respect she commanded, she was unanimously appointed the first woman alderman of the Huddersfield Borough Council, and in 1945 she was elected the first female mayor of Huddersfield. Mary was president of both the Huddersfield Borough Labour Party and the Huddersfield East Parliamentary Committee, a member of the Huddersfield Labour Party Women's Section, and throughout her political career, until her retirement from the Town Council in 1949, she was a fierce champion for the rights of women, children and the elderly. Her priorities can be best summed up in her own words in her maiden speech as mayor in 1945. And this is what she said. "I well remember visiting a horrible yard at the bottom of the town, now destroyed, and being asked into the one room where, in addition to father, mother and several younger children, there was an old grandmother in bed and a young girl in secondary school uniform doing homework at a corner of the one table. That child was beautiful, clean, neat and absorbed in her work. I have often thought of her surroundings, the badly lit yard, the crowded room and the almost incredible lack of facilities. Housing, education and town planning are next to my heart because I want us to, above all, to think of the rising generation. inequality of opportunity, of which there is still plenty about, must be not ironed out. No one will ever convince me that it is either right or inherent in the constitution of the world that one child should have been born in the home of books and flowers, while others are born into slums. As Martin Pugh points out, the chief thrust of the Labour Party's approach to women lay in the area of standards of living and state social welfare policies. And Mary is a good example of this, sitting on various committees, including those for maternity, child welfare and housing. Recognising the value of her own education, which enabled her to pursue a career she enjoyed and which gave her the satisfaction of helping others through her legal work, but also the economic freedom to pursue her work on the council and in other voluntary positions, she saw access to education as the key to ironing out equality. To this end, she was the deputy chairman of the Education Committee, and between 1944 and 1946, and 1948 and 50, was a governor of the Huddersfield Technical College. She also sought to improve education in more innovative and wide-ranging ways. For example, she was a founder member of the Huddersfield Thespians and the secretary of a local book club, where even her taste in literature was described as highbrow left. However, although she did not call herself a feminist, she also sought specifically to improve living conditions, education, and access to the professions for women. Asked about her year as mayor, Mary said that the highlight was the dinner given in her honour by the women's groups of which she was a member, which included the Women's Luncheon Club, the Huddersfield branch of the Business and Professional Women's Club, and the Huddersfield Sir Optimist Club. She was also a founder member and in 1935 to 1937 president of the Huddersfield branch of the British Federation of University Women, which was established in 1923 to promote international, national and personal relations between women in all professions, enable them to take concerted actions on matters affecting their common interests, encourage research work by university women and promote the extension of all professions to women. As an example of her championing of women and women's education, in her legal practice, Mary employed a number of women. At one point, she employed only women. And in practical ways, she encouraged the generation of women who followed her to pursue a career in the law, including her managing clerk, Dora Atkinson, whom she helped to qualify as a solicitor. She also trained at least two other women to become solicitors. On a smaller scale, when Mary was elected mayor, she appointed her 17-year-old cousin, Helen Robinson, as mayoress. And I always think that's a really important thing that she does, because Helen's still at school. She's a 17-year-old schoolgirl, and her aunt is the, her cousin is the mayor of Huddersfield. And this girl is going into school saying, my aunt's the mayor, and all of these girls must be thinking, well, what can we be? What can we do? Anyway, the next slide, please. Mary lived most of her life in Huddersfield, and during the Second World War, she designed and built a small holding, Ark Home, in Almondbury. She lived there with her friends Phyllis Calway and Dorothy Dunch. Phyllis was a renowned naturalist, and the house was originally going to be called the Ark because of her menagerie. But as you can see, Mary's mother put a stop to that, so it was Ark Home. Phyllis wrote a book about the building of Ark Home in which Mary is referred to as Argue, which I think is probably a fitting nickname from everything that I've read about her. In further evidence of her independent manner, as Phyllis recalled, having decided to build her own house, Argue never stops to reason why when she has made up her mind. The next day, Argue found a nice artistic architect. Argue found a steep field with a stream at the bottom. Argue set the ball rolling. Unfortunately, this decision coincided with the outbreak of World War II, which Phyllis described as an upheaval of such magnitude, we just wanted to be allowed to live and not to die. Tragically, having survived the war, and shortly after having set up their small holding, Phyllis died in 1945. Mary continued to live at Ark Home, where she enjoyed feeding her hens and geese, but not housework. And in January 1953, aged 56, she married Richard, known as Harry Brown, whom she met when they were both elected to the town council for the first time. When Harry was appointed mayor in 1958, it was reported that Mary had achieved another first by becoming the first former mayoress, thus rounding off 25 years of public service to Huddersfield. The inaugural dinner held in honour of the new mayor and mayoress was attended by Mary's mother, brother, sister-in-law and nephew. And when Mary left Huddersfield as a widow in 1968, it was to be closer to her brother in Suffolk. And I am reliably informed by Mary's niece is that that as far as her brother was concerned, it was so that he could keep an eye on her and what she was up to. Having come to national attention in the 1920s as one of the first women solicitors, when Mary died on the 25th of February 1981, her enormous contribution to the opening of the legal profession to women and as the first woman mayor of Huddersfield was largely unremarked outside Huddersfield. As I said at the beginning of this talk, women's history is often overlooked, women's stories unrecorded and under-researched. But we must all keep an eye on Mary and others like her, like Monica Gaikie Cobb, so that as she did during her lifetime, Mary can continue to inspire the next generation of women lawyers and politicians.